welcome to this week's episode of the Two Time Labs podcast. And this is Francis Wade, and the special guest that we have today is Dr. Melanie Wilson, a psychologist. Melanie, welcome to the Two Time Labs podcast.
Thank you so much, Francis. I've really been looking forward to it.
Well, I have too. You know, it's not very often that I come across a blog that really just blows me away. I'm going to be honest that I've become a fan. I was trolling through and looking at all the different entries that you made, and let me tell my listening audience why I invited you to come on the podcast, because what you've done is just nothing that I've ever seen. So, Melanie, Dr. Melanie Wilson, let me just give you a little background before I get into what got me interested, is a psychologist, a Christian psychologist, a mother of six, and a homeschooler, and she's also an author. Author of the book So You're Not Wonder Woman. And her blog, a recent portion or some of the entries on her blog focused on one thing: taking one productivity technique and applying it for 1 week for a year. So we're now in November. She has 40 something entries, and each week what she's done is to take one technique, many of which, as a listener to this podcast, I'm sure you've heard of. She applied it for the week, used it, and then reported on how well it worked or didn't work. Melanie, did I capture what did I capture it correctly? Because by itself, it's mind blowing in terms of a body of work. Did I capture it correctly?
You did. That was great. It was fantastic.
And I'll tell our listening audience, we'll ask you questions about why you did it and what it's been like, but I'll tell you what attracted me immediately is that it so runs against, what you've done runs against the culture in which we're in right now, where people are throwing around a lot of opinions in the shape of five top tips to do this and that. And these opinions aren't formed by either research, and definitely not by direct experience. And what blows me away about your website, and we'll give all the information about how to find her website and how to contact Melanie at the end, is that it's all based on empirical, experimental fact. Not opinion, although there are lots of opinions that came from the fact.
Right.
But you actually built the data, you built the experience, you tried it yourself, and then reported, here's what I did. And there's nobody doing. I tell you, there are so few people who are interested in trying before talking. Mm-hmm. It's just not a part of our culture today. So that's one of the big reasons why I invited you on, Melanie. Because it's almost like you're an experimental psychologist, and you're in the area of productivity, and you're not just throwing around your opinion. You're actually trying something before actually doing it. Tell me if I'm saying this incorrectly, but am I capturing it correctly?
You are capturing it correctly, although you're making me aspire to want to do what I'm doing even better. You're making me want to go back to the lab and get a bunch of people to actually see if these things work for other people, because I just have what psychologists call an N of one. I'm just one person trying these things out, and I know that you're interested in why I even started this process.
Yes,
and
sure am.
And I would love to tell you that really I think the main reason that I started it was because I had just moved multiple blogs that I had going in different states to the cyclewith6.com platform. And I've been a fan of productivity for a long time. I just love it. I love to read about it. I love to try different applications and software programs. And I was following an excellent Christian blog on the stewardship of time. It's called lifeofasteward.com. And I just got to thinking that it would be really fun and maybe a way to grow my blog following if I would write about a different productivity approach every week and my experience using it. And so I really started off thinking, well, this will be a great way to grow my blog readership because a lot of people are like me and they love productivity stuff and time management stuff and goal reaching material. And that's really why I got into it. You know, I did have the idea that I could kind of indulge my own passion for productivity at the same time. You know, I was constantly changing my approach anyway.
Right.
And, you know, I might as well write about it and benefit from it and then take, as you say, a more scientific look at it. Actually, you know, be intentional about what I'm doing and not just jumping from here to there without really evaluating why I was not continuing with something.
Right. And tell me something. When you started out, did you plan to go for the entire year? Was that your intention?
Absolutely. It was my intention. And I really believed, and I was right, that if I publicly declared that I was going to do this for a year, that it would help me to be accountable and to continue with it even when it got boring. And it worked. And, you know, that's because I know my own personality very well. And that is that I am very much wanting other people's approval and not wanting to let them down. And, you know, there are aspects of that that I really don't like, of course, but I can make it work for me. And that's really the approach that I was taking to the whole year of living productively, is that I wanted to make my own inclinations, my own strengths and weaknesses work for me to create a productive lifestyle. And one of the things that I explain on the blog is that I'm one of these people that likes to do many, many different activities. I've heard people over the years tell me that I just need to say no, that I need to limit myself to, you know, just a few pursuits. You know, I can't homeschool and be a writer and a blogger and a speaker and a podcaster and a scrapbooker and a tennis and fitness enthusiast. I can't do all of those things, so I need to choose. And I have tried to choose. I really, really have. But it fails because I love all of those activities and I really don't want to give them up. And so I realized that if I wasn't going to give any of them up, I had to become very, very skilled at managing my time and my commitments. And so that was another thing in the back of my mind, although I will admit that it was probably a lesser motivation when I began.
It's fascinating that you used a self-knowledge or a knowledge of your own. In my language, I call it the habit change supports.
Mm-hmm.
You essentially, it's what they call meta-learning. You figured out how you learn,
mm-hmm,
and use that for your own advantage in a very conscious way, as opposed to just hoping that it would turn out at the end without the, for example, the publicity or the publishing and having that be a support for you. So it's fascinating that you use, mm-hmm, that, knowing that it would help you get to the end. Because here you are, you're at week 40 something and you're almost there, you know?
Yes, I know.
It was extremely successful, the take on the idea that I'll do one per week, because I think most people would actually try that and fail. Because they wouldn't have that self-knowledge of what they need to put in place to keep them going. No?
Well, I do agree with you. I've had people tell me before, you know, wow, you know, how are you able to, you know, finish writing a book or, you know, finish, I did the Body for Life challenge a few years back, and I was able to persevere through that 12-week period and finish that challenge. And I think probably, I mean, I think number one, my faith is a huge factor in that. Number two, it's my experience with having to persevere. You know, I was just explaining to my kids that I know what it was. I was telling my daughter, who is almost 10, that she really has a gift for speaking. And she said, oh, I don't want to be a speaker. I don't want to have to go to school for so many years like you did. And I said, yeah. And I said, oh, you don't have to have a PhD to be a speaker. And I said, you know, really, so many people quit their education well before that, and they're very successful speakers. But it was very difficult for me to persevere and finish that PhD, probably the most difficult thing that I've done. It was very, very difficult for me for a number of reasons that I describe in So You're Not Wonder Woman. Very, very challenging. So I think, you know, once having gone through that and completed it and persevered, it makes doing a year-long productivity challenge seem not that hard.
Interesting. And as you come to the, oh, we're almost to the end of the year, and you look back, what are some of the ways in which, what's different now from when you started at the very beginning? So at the very beginning, it looked, I imagine it looked like a week of changing, and then another week of changing, another week of changing. Now that you look back at the 40-something weeks, I'm really interested to find out what's different now. What do you see now that you didn't see when you started out about the process?
You know, I think the first thing that's really different is that I see this as a community effort. When I began, my blog was much, much smaller. I had a much, much smaller readership, and I really didn't expect many people to read it. I thought a few would, for sure. But I didn't think many people would, and I didn't think many people would comment and give me feedback and or really take me seriously, especially those who were not living the same kind of lifestyle that I do. You know, I just consider myself a homeschooling mom, and I was very surprised when even businessmen whose lives are just so different than mine are engaging with me on this topic and taking what I have to say seriously. That really surprised me. And it made it more about what other people need to determine about their own productivity systems and approaches.
Yes.
Instead of just about me and what I needed. Although that also surprised me, because I didn't really expect to find something that worked really, really well for me. And I feel, even at this point when I'm not at the end of the year, I feel that I have discovered some things that are so, so useful to me, not only in terms of what works, but what doesn't work. And it's been a fantastic project. I'm so glad that I took it on.
Well, I certainly feel like one of these business people who is on the side, and it's weird, you know. Part of me watch is it's kind of like watching someone else, like walk a tightrope almost. Because each entry, and I haven't read all of your entries yet, but each one, I approach each one with, I notice my own biases. Like I think some things are good and some things are useless.
Sure.
So I have that opinion before I read your blog. So I read it with a sense of nervousness, wondering, are you going to agree or not? I know there's going to be a part where you're going to talk about what worked, and there's going to be a part where you talk about what didn't work. And at the end of it, you know, some of my biases get confirmed and some of them get challenged. And but at the end of it, I feel like I'm cheering you on. It's very strange. Go ahead, Melanie. Go, Melanie. Like, and I bet a lot of people are on the sides watching you get to week 41, 42. You're almost to 56. We want you to complete what the year. We want you to finish every last post. You know, we just want you to because, heck, you know, the notion to the average person of taking on one improvement per week and then blogging about it in a public way is just torturous. that you're doing it, however, is uplifting and inspiring.
Well, that's great. You know, that's so funny to me because it really very, very few times have I felt like, ugh, I really don't want to do this. You know, I had some times this summer when I really didn't feel well, and I think it affected the results that I got. But on the other hand, I was able to say, you know, a productivity approach has to work even when we don't feel well, when we're not in a really, you know, on fire productive state. And I don't know, I felt, and I did write about this, I felt that at those times that having that commitment that I had to keep, that I felt I had to keep with the blog and following through on my testing and writing about it, kept me going even when I didn't feel well. It was a purpose. You know, in the summertime, I don't have the homeschooling commitments that I do during the rest of the year. So just having that blog post that I felt that I really needed to be writing was probably a good thing in the end.
It kept you focused on producing this very big result.
Yeah, and just moving forward, you know?
Mm-hmm. In terms of keeping your momentum going around something positive?
Yes. Very much so.
That makes perfect sense, and there's a lot for us to learn because we human beings aren't really good at improving ourselves, especially on our own. Worse, we're better off if someone is watching over us and sort of pushing us and coaching us and applying some degree of force or bribes or something.
Yeah.
But on our own, you know, you did this without anyone asking you to, without anyone expecting you to. And, you know, you went through all of these tough spots essentially just by managing yourself, managing your own mind. And that's really fascinating because it's exactly what we need to become excellent in terms of our own productivity, to become world class or to become exemplary. We need to go through what you went through.
I would agree with you, except I do feel like I had people helping me along the way. You know, I had a friend who would email me and just ask me, you know, what are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do this next week and how's that going? And there were some weeks when I was so excited about what I was discovering that I couldn't wait to just blog about it. I had to tell someone. And so I would talk with her because we share that passion for productivity. That's actually how we met, was on a forum talking about productivity. So, and, you know, I had a number of people asking me on the blog or on Facebook or via email, you know, what are you planning for the future? Have you ever thought about this? And thank you so much for doing this. And this approach that you wrote about, I hadn't heard of it, and it's so helpful for me. You know, that just really spurred me on to just knowing that by what I write, even approaches that don't personally work for me, if I share them and they do work for someone else, I mean, that's really gratifying.
Yes, yes, because there's so much to learn from, it's like science, you know, there's something to learn from a failed experiment.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that you can gain from watching someone else try something and not succeed.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you can sometimes figure out, I wouldn't quite do it like that. Let me try it and see if it works for me. And then, voila, it does.
Mm-hmm. And
it's amazing.
And I've had people ask me, you know, after the fact, you know, have you thought about using that approach in this particular way? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I will answer them and just say, you know, no, I haven't. And this is why I felt it wasn't the right approach for me. But I can absolutely see where it could work for you, given your circumstances. So,
right.
And, you know, I think that's one of the things that we share in common, Francis, is that we do understand that, you know, productivity is a lot like homeschooling in that the best approach is almost always going to be an eclectic approach.
Mm.
And I do understand why, you know, people like David Allen will write about one approach as, you know, in a pure fashion, because they have to do that, really. You know, if they said the best approach to time management is this eclectic approach and you just do a little of this and a little of that, you know, I don't know that people would be very excited about buying the book, because it doesn't really say a whole lot. Mm-hmm. But by him saying this is the way to get things done, you've given me a place that I can start from and determine what of that works for me personally and what doesn't. And and I feel like I'm doing that too. You know, not everyone who listens to what I have to say about my experiments on my blog is in the same place that I am. You know, I doubt that many have six children and that even that many are homeschooling. That's what's been really interesting too, is that I think most of my homeschool readers aren't necessarily reading those productivity posts. I seem to have a completely different audience for that.
And I suspect.
Yeah, yes, I do. But on the other hand, I will say this. I have had people who are not interested in productivity writing and blogs at all. They aren't familiar with them. Read what I'm writing just because it's me writing it and they're subscribed to my blog. And it's been very useful to them. So that's really exciting too, you know, that it can be brought more into the mainstream and not just people who are all geeked out about productivity.
Yeah, and I think the approach that you took, the experimental approach, is one that appeals to everyone, because it's fact-based.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, here's what she's trying and here's what worked. And everyone can understand that, as opposed to just repeating a concept that's in a book. Mm-hmm. That you've never tried, or you've never tried anything other than that same concept. You know, that gets boring and it's very abstract and it's like ho-hum.
Right.
But, you know, you're in a way, not in a way, as I read your posts, I realized you're writing a story every week.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, here's a story of what I tried this week. And it has a beginning where you laid out the plan. It has a middle where you actually, you know, you fought the dragons and tried to overcome. And it had a conclusion where here's where I won and here's where I lost and I lived to fight another day and here's what I'm going to try next week. It's just like a 41 little short reality-based stories. It's like watching a reality-based program where, hey, TV program.
Well, you're giving me a different perspective on this series for sure. And that's really neat. I'm glad that you see it that way.
It all of a sudden it just popped into my head. But let me take our listeners through some of the actual experiments and techniques that you tried, and then I want you to share, if you could share with us some of the big surprises in terms of some of the things that worked, some of the techniques that worked, mm-hmm. and some of the techniques that didn't work. But let me. I'm just reading from your blog, really. It says a year of living productively, and there's week one through week, I think I'm looking at week 41 is the last one, I think. And between week one was paper to-do list, mm-hmm. week two was Covey's quadrants, mm-hmm. week four was paper planner, week six was guilt hour. Mm-hmm. Oh, I wish you could come on the program and tell us what each one is, because half of them I've never heard of.
Uh-huh.
Week 10 was the time warrior. Oh, my God. Week 12 was the repeat test.
Yes.
Week 14, eat that frog.
Mm-hmm.
Week 20, getting things done, which most people would have heard of.
Yes.
Week 25, make it happen in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
All techniques that week 38, interrupters log.
Mm-hmm.
All these techniques that, you know, I've heard some of them, I've heard pieces of some of them, and you went and actually found them and actually did them. So which ones did you find were surprising in the helpful way and in the unhelpful way?
Mm-hmm. Boy, you know, paper, I was still surprised, even though I used paper for years, you know, like most people, you know, before smartphones were all the rage, I was surprised that there is just something about paper that is more gratifying when you are crossing off a task that you've finished. And I've used a number of different apps that try to replicate that experience digitally, and it still just doesn't quite do it. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm committed to using paper, because I'm not, but I still had to admit that there really was something about a paper to-do list that works. And so when people tell me, oh, I have to use paper, and they're almost kind of saying it apologetically, I say, that's great. You know, I understand why, because it is effective. It really is effective. It's the technique, the approach that my husband uses, and I've written about this before, that my husband is one of the most productive people that I know, but he does not get into productivity the way that I do. He has a very simple written to-do list for each work day, and the rest of his work, he just does it without much fanfare. So I respect that. The most recent approach that I tested that has been the most effective in changing the way that I get things done is using little and often. Little and often is a way, especially, of getting the ball rolling on tasks or projects that you just are not wanting to do, even if you initially want to do them. There's resistance that gets built up for whatever reason. It can be more ingrained resistance because it's just something that you really don't want to do, but maybe you have to do, or it can be more temporary resistance that I've found. You know, maybe it's evening and you're tired and you just don't want to get things ready for the next day. I mean, maybe that's all it is. Or maybe there's a project that you really need to get the ball rolling on and you just keep thinking, I'll just do it tomorrow. I'll do it this weekend. And that is absolutely what I was doing. I was keeping up until that point with all of my major commitments. But it was those projects that I really want to get done that I keep putting off. They seem like they're going to be tedious and time-consuming. And so I kept avoiding them. And yes, that's a great example of something that people put off for the same reason. Not only does it take a long time, but it can be just a negative emotional experience. I tend to put those kinds of things off. And little and often means that all I have to do is some tiny, tiny little step toward the completion of that task or project, and I get to count it as a win. Then I can reschedule it for the next day, and I'm not going to go into, you know, because it becomes a little bit more complicated to explain the exact approach that I'm using for that. Mm-hmm. But as long as you do some little thing toward it, and starting as soon as it makes sense to start. So if, you know, as soon as you get everything that you need to start working on your taxes, then I would put that on my to-do list and I would do some little thing toward that. So maybe that some little thing is that I go through my email folder where I keep all of my emailed receipts of things that are tax deductible. And I make sure that everything that needs to be in that folder is in there. That's it. Then I'm done. Mm-hmm. And then I cross off that task and I begin on it either the next day or a few days later, using the system that I've been using lately. But that really just blew me away. And I realized that I needed to apply little and often to my housework as well. You know,
there we go.
Yeah, I mean, it seems obvious that you would need to do that for those really onerous big projects like taxes. But when it came time to, okay, I need to clean my bathroom, in my mind I was thinking, I really should spend an hour, hour and a half on that to do it perfectly, to get it completely done. And of course that makes me not want to do it. I don't want to take that much time. And so now I tell myself that if I do anything, if I swish the toilet to clean it, if I clean off the inside of my shower, if I use some shower cleaner on the inside of my shower door, I count that as completed for today. If I still want to keep going on it, then I add it to my task list for the next day as well. And all I have to do is just one little bit to move it forward. And that has just revolutionized my work and my productivity. I just broke through that resistance that I had built up on so many tasks and projects that I had. And it's just been phenomenal. And I really have to credit Mark Forster for introducing me to that.
Uh-huh.
And it's not a new concept. He didn't originate the idea of just doing a little bit, of course, but I think he has really written about it the most extensively and practiced it and introduced me to that notion. And I tried it and it really worked. And then I dropped it for some reason and I wasn't doing it again. And then I decided I needed to test this out again as a part of this series. And I'm just thrilled with that. So that's what has worked great.
Well, what's interesting about these examples, the two examples that you gave, is that they're both physical actions. So there's a physicality involved. There's an observable procedure that's involved. But you're focusing on the psychological benefit in both cases.
Yeah.
That there really is no practical, let's say, benefit for crossing off an item on a to-do list right. as opposed to having it disappear from a screen on an electronic to-do list. You know, there's no, it's six of one, half dozen of the other. There's no magic that happens between pen and ink and paper that causes us to be more productive.
Right.
But what you're asserting is that there's a psychological benefit that it's probably going to go away. Your kids probably won't have the same experience because they're probably all digital already. And you know, I saw a 2-year-old on a laptop the other day, graduated from an iPad because it wasn't powerful enough. And I said, this kid couldn't even read. this kid is now on a laptop and is typing happily away and playing these games and doing all these things. And so that kid won't, you know, they probably won't have the relationship that you and I have to writing on paper and then crossing something off and feeling the paper against your hand and the pen and the ink and the swish and then the visual cue that you've accomplished something. They won't have that whole, you know, set of actions that produce that emotional benefit. But we do. And what's interesting is that you're focusing on the emotional benefit to you of doing the one action and of engaging in that habit of starting one thing at a time. It's as I'm listening, it's fascinating because it's not typically what we focus on when we focus on productivity and time management. It's usually about get the widgets out the door. But the psychological benefits that you're talking about are always there. It's just that we're not so used to talking about them explicitly, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also a different approach to think about incremental change. I mean, we all know that it's just unrealistic to expect that we're going to read a book like Getting Things Done and we're just going to take that philosophy on and we're going to do it perfectly day in and day out right from the start. We're going to completely change the way we do everything. And that's just not realistic. And I think so many people, no matter what approach they're trying to adopt, get so frustrated that they just can't do it 100% that they quit. And I think that's been a real advantage of what I'm doing is that it's already built in to the format of my blog posts that some things are going to work and some things aren't. And there's always next week, you know, where I can find something else that will be another tool that I can add to my productivity toolbox.
Yeah, and I think the implication there is also that it's not like you're going to get to week 17 and find the answer and stop.
No, right.
This is not how it works, but that is how people often relate to books and programs that they enjoy, which is that they think, okay, this is it, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And that the person who has put together the content that they so enjoy is now to be obeyed and just followed, and you know, no need to ask any questions, I just need to do it and just keep going, and until the day I die, I'll just keep doing it. But that's really not how life works.
No.
I think you're right. The structure of what you've done, it forces us to say, oh my God, it's a year. it's a year of one step. Have you seen this video, How I Learned to Dance in a Year?
No.
Oh, fascinating video. It's done by I think she's an ex-Google or Microsoft employee. But anyway, she teaches herself to dance in a year, and she videotapes day one, like day 15, day 30, day 100 and something, day 300, and then finally at the end. And what she does is she puts together one dance, and you can see at the beginning that she's no dancer.
Okay.
She plays one tune, but between the beginning of the year and the end of the year, she teaches herself how to perform this one dance to this one tune.
Mm.
And beginning and the end, the gap is just awesome and amazing. She's actually created a website, and I think it's something like learntodanceinayear.com.
Hmm.
And she's actually inviting people who have not a year, but I think it's 6-month projects, to sign up on her website and to do a video every day and to share the video every day as a structure for sort of ongoing improvement.
Okay.
But it's all video, I believe. No blogging and no podcasting. I believe it's all video.
Okay.
Using her example. And her example, she condensed it all down to this 4 or 5 minute video. I actually play it in my classes, and your body gets really quiet because you can see her go from having almost no skill to being what you would call extremely skilled, but you get to see all the steps, not all, a few of the steps in between. Watching you do what you did makes me have that same sort of feeling of watching an impresario start off from sort of novice level almost.
Mm-hmm.
But then over time, allowing us to see the warts and all as you become someone who's extremely skilled and extremely knowledgeable, especially about managing yourself as you go through the change. That for me, again, is one of the most fascinating things, parts of what you've done.
Well, I'm glad that you see it that way, because that video sounds very inspiring. I'll definitely check it out.
Oh, it definitely is. So you told us about two of the good spots. Did you have any other good techniques you wanted to, the good surprises, before we go into the ones that were surprising in the other way?
Okay. You know, one that I thought I would mention that worked really well that many people haven't heard of is the repeat test. And the repeat test is simply you put down the hours of the day along the left side of your paper, just a piece of paper when you begin the day. And every hour you go back and decide if you're pleased with the way you spent that hour. And if you're not, then you write down what you did that wasn't pleasing to you, that wasn't functional, didn't move you toward your goals. And that was really surprising to me that was so effective, because it got me thinking not about, you know, how productive am I this week, not how productive am I today, but how productive was I this last hour. And because I didn't want to write anything down, for that hour, it made me conscious of spending my time well, so that I wouldn't have to go back and every hour write down, oh, you know, I was on Facebook and I shouldn't have been, or whatever that was. And it was really quite effective. I don't think that doing that day in and day out would work, But I think if we get into, you know, just kind of a time-wasting slump, we're developing some bad habits, that is an excellent approach to get yourself back on track.
Wow, it's a great quote. It's a great it's a great tool for coaches.
Gives
someone who they're coaching who feels as if they're not going anywhere, because I guess what happens in that time you're doing is that your awareness goes through the roof, no?
It does.
And you're watching yourself, again, meta-learning, you're watching yourself trying to executing each hour, and you're learning how you execute by essentially watching yourself on a sort of a really intense basis, no?
Yes, very much so. So that's a great technique.
Note to self, I'm going to try that one also.
Okay. And then, go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, go ahead, I was just going to prompt you into the next. Go ahead.
Okay, well, then you were asking, were there some techniques that didn't work as well?
And yes, that maybe you thought might work.
Right. One that I thought I really had high hopes for, and I heard about it on Life Hacker, was the guilt hour. And the idea was, now this was being done on a company-wide basis, and I always take those kinds of productivity things that I read and I try to apply them to myself. In some ways, I feel like I do have a team that I work with because I'm working with my kids every day, and we work together as a team for many of the things that we do. But this one, I didn't apply it to all of my kids. I just applied it to myself. And the idea was that every week you were to choose a day and have 1 hour that you dedicated to working on tasks that made you feel guilty. So you could just get rid of those, tasks that you feel guilty about not doing. Okay, so.
Oh, you mean like flossing or no?
I wouldn't think that. It would be more like, I promised this person that I would write up, you know, how I do such and so, and give that to them, and I've just been avoiding them because I didn't want to do it. You know, those kinds of things that you have. Or, you know, if it's at a company level, it could be, you know, you're supposed to be getting this project done, but you just put it on the back burner so that you can deal with the urgent tasks that come across your desk, and you feel guilty because you're doing nothing on it. And so that was the idea, and for me, it absolutely backfired. I didn't want to do it even more than I didn't want to do it. That did not work at all. Even thinking about guilt, the guilt that I had, it just, because, you know, that's why I was avoiding it, you know, is because I felt guilty. So, you know, I'm not sure how you could redeem that. Maybe calling it like a freedom hour or something like that. But I think even the name of it just really sabotaged me. It just did not work.
And it reinforced the feeling of guilt, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not cool.
No, definitely not cool. And then this is kind of interesting, and this is something that I haven't shared on the blog. You know, I feel like because I have a format for my blog post, and I really like to stick to that, not only because it makes it time effective for me to write those blog posts, but I feel like people who come to read my latest post, that they would like the post to be pretty standardized, you know, so they can just see, you know, what worked, what didn't work, you know, did it work for you overall, you know, is it something that you really liked, and then now what are you going to do? So one of the things that I haven't been able to really talk about is the fact that I can do a week-long test on something, and I can say, wow, you know, I really did like this, you know, it surprised me, and one of those, I will just tell you honestly, that I felt like, wow, you know, this really does work, was getting things done, doing tasks according to the context that they're in. And I had tried getting things done years before, but I felt like I needed to revisit it because I gave up on it for a number of reasons. But I really felt like doing work according to the context of the task, which for those who aren't familiar, I doubt anyone isn't familiar, but just in case, it's, you know, putting all of your phone call tasks in the same context and putting all of your, you know, maybe by location. You know, I have a home office that's actually, I have to go outside of my house to get to it. And sometimes when it's cold in the winter, I don't like to go out there. So when I do go out, I like to get everything done that needs to be done out there.
Right.
So I organized tasks according to context, and my result was that I really did feel like that was valuable. Mm. But then something interesting happened. As time went by, so that was just a week test, you know, and as time went by, I found myself not interested in looking at tasks according to context at all. I mean, and to this day, I have really no interest in organizing my tasks that way. I think it happened to work that week because I started thinking about how many tasks I had that I could do when I was on my mobile device that I wasn't really thinking about, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I don't think I have to tag my tasks with a context in order to figure that out.
Every single one.
No. I really don't need to, you know, and I already just naturally do it when I look at my list for the day. And if I'm, you know, somewhere where I have my mobile phone, for example, and I have time to use to get things done, I just automatically know that I can look at my list and pick out those tasks that I can go ahead and do using my mobile device. I don't need to, when I'm inputting my tasks, organize them all according to context. And it just feels like a waste of time. So the truth about whether something will work for me or not tends to kind of come out over time and not necessarily just in that week that I am testing.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It sounds as if the context became a principle over time rather than a practice.
Yes, exactly. And that's the other thing that I'm learning. I wrote a series of blog posts a while back about being a rebel, the rebel's guide to getting things done. And that was at a time when I realized that even though consciously I wanted to adopt everything that David Allen's Getting Things Done told me I needed to adopt. You know, I wanted to be productive like David Allen and all of his team. But, I mean, that's just the truth. I'm a rule-following girl on the outside. But on the inside, I tell myself, that is really stupid. And you don't have to tag all of your tasks with a context. And I started realizing that, you know, I needed to begin to think about productivity more like my husband would. My husband has more of a rebellious personality, but I mean that in a good way. I mean, he's not, you know, he's not a loudmouth, or he's not obnoxious, but he will not do something that he thinks is a waste of time.
Mm.
And I was feeling like, there's something wrong with me if I'm not going to do all these productivity systems the way that they're written. And I realized there isn't anything wrong with me. It's just that my inner rebel is saying, this is dumb. We don't need to do it.
Mm.
And I'm finding as I go through this process of testing that even if something appears to work for me in the short term, my rebel will tell me, no, you don't need to do it. So it's interesting.
Well, I've found that also that as I grow and evolve, and actually the protagonist in my book goes through this experience of trying to use his memory in the very beginning when he was very young. Then he starts using lists. Then he evolves to using lots of a single schedule and very few lists. And then he tries to go back to using lists, and he can't.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of has that same feeling that you have, that there's something wrong with him. And all it is that his capacity has increased and evolved so that what was useful at one point in his career or in his age or his development is no longer useful when you get to the next stage.
Right.
And now you got to look for the next thing if you're going to keep on improving. And then the next thing and then the next thing. And that strikes me as being sort of very human.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, it would be easy. It really would. If we could just pick up a book and read it and just do everything that it says, and it would work perfectly for us. You know, and yeah. I love your book. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, that's just it. You know, we wish that it would work that way, but it just doesn't. And when I come to the end of this year and I have a variety of tools, like I keep saying, tools in my productivity toolkit that I can pull out and use to get things done, I will only have a toolkit for this stage of my life.
Yes.
Things are changing. You know, I'm getting into other areas, other challenges. I'm interested in having my own homeschooling publishing business. And if I do that, then I'm going to need a whole different set of tools for managing those new challenges. And, you know, as my children grow, then, you know, things are going to be different. They're going to be able to help me with more things. They're going to need less of my time, but they may need more of my time in other ways. And, you know, I have no idea what my productivity is going to look like then, but at least I have gone through this process of looking at and trying many different approaches so that maybe some of the ones that don't work for me now would work for me in the future. And I'm glad that I've had the experience to call upon to determine that.
Yeah, you know, it's so evident from sort of reading your posts from, and I read the ones at the very beginning and the ones at the very end, that there's no way you will end the year being the same person you were at the beginning in terms of your productivity. Just reading the post tells me that it's already not happening. You can't go back to be, you know, the person before you did the first week where you tried the paper to-do list. You can't flush all of that knowledge out and go back to being that person. You know too much. You've tried too many things. You know yourself at a different level. You know what works for you and you know what doesn't work for you. You know, it's kind of like you can't not know what you now know.
Mm-hmm.
And where you've got to go next has got to be, and this is what people have a hard time with, is to hang out in this, keep hanging out in this zone of, gee, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's really, really scary to hang out in that zone.
It can be.
More than just a little small instant, but you know, you threw yourself into that zone every week, which is what makes the whole thing so gripping. Uh-huh. My God, what's she doing this week?
Right. Well,
it really takes courage to hang out in that zone, and it's inspiring to hear that at the end of the year you expect to once again be in that zone, even though you, mm-hmm. I believe you might have the world record for trying the most productivity techniques, certainly in a year.
Well, I don't know if I do, but it's really been, I think, a better experience than what I was having before, and I think you and I share the same perspective on this.
Mm.
I think before I did this series, I felt like if something that was recommended that many other people used and loved didn't work for me, there was something wrong with me.
Yeah.
And I just needed to change me. I just needed to try harder. I needed to be more disciplined, etc., etc. And I've noticed when people will kind of challenge some of the things that I've, you know, some of the conclusions that I've reached, it doesn't bother me at all. Not at all.
Yes.
I feel so secure because I'm not telling them that it doesn't work for them or that it doesn't work for other people. I'm just saying right now it does not work for me. It's just not something that I want to pick up and use again.
Yes. And there are some people who have a hard time with that even.
Mm-hmm.
Because they interpret your experimental result, they interpret it as an attack on what they do or don't do.
Mm-hmm.
Or a sign of disapproval or or how dare you or agenda and your agenda is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really unfortunate because, you know, what I love about the way you speak and write and your whole approach is that you're not just looking at the practice and the habits and the rituals, you're looking at the psychology and the experience and the emotions, and that plays all the way throughout all of us. You know, the guilt is very, very real.
Mm-hmm.
And the struggle that we find to motivate ourselves, very, very real. The little satisfaction we get from making small wins, very, very, very real. The little satisfaction we get from crossing something off on paper, my God, it's so real. It's like it shouldn't be that real, but oh, there it is.
All right.
That these psychological insights and understanding, I think they all accumulate and possibly give us a level of freedom that we don't normally have in the productivity world, which tends to be very follow the rules and very rigid. What do you think?
Oh, I so agree with you. Mm. And I think we're attracted to the rules because we think that it's going to make life easier. You know, if I just know that in order to do my job, I have to do X, Y, and Z in this order. You know, that's very appealing, at least at the outset. It is to me. I would love to just have this, you know, just tell me what to do, and I will do it. But the problem is that we won't be happy with that. I mean, most people won't be. I think there are some people who have the personality that they crave order so much. That having that, and they're detail people, they're very rule-oriented.
Yes. They can quote books and programs.
It may work beautifully for them. Yes, it can. But, you know, for me, you know, I remember one particular test that I did. I wish I could remember exactly what I was testing. I only remember in the conclusion I said, I ended up spending more time with my kids and with my family doing what they wanted me to do with them. And in the end, that was what was most important for me that week. Mm. And, you know, you can't find that in a system or in a book.
Yeah.
They're not going to tell you spend, you know, 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. with your family. You know, nobody can tell you what's most important in the moment for you. And I think it's a freedom that comes from knowing that you're an individual and that you have strengths and weaknesses and you can work with those, you know, stop fighting them. I think, you know, that was another huge revelation for me. And I think for some of my readers too, that when I used heat mapping, which is just a fancy way of saying, determine when you're the most productive and schedule your big activities, your most onerous tasks for those times. And you wouldn't believe how many years I have been trying to follow a homeschooling schedule that has been prescribed by many leaders who are homeschooling. And that was to put these certain very active activities, I don't know how else to say that, but, you know, where you're actually doing practical things like science and, you know, building forts or whatever it is for your homeschooling, do that in the afternoon. You know, the idea was, well, when you have little ones who are napping and stuff, then that's the time to do that. Well, that makes perfect sense, and I have been trying to do that for so many years. But the fact is, I don't really like to do science experiments. I really don't. And what I really like to do is I love to read history with my kids. I love it. I love to read literature with my kids. And so I would always start my day with those favorite things that I like to do. And that really makes no sense, because by the time I get to the afternoon and then I have to do science experiments and I'm low energy, low productivity, it's just yeah. not going to happen, right?
Yeah.
So now I actually do science experiments in the morning now.
In the morning.
I do it with using another thing that I've realized about myself, which is that I need accountability. And so I have a friend and her kids come over and do science with us. So that helps me to get the science done. But other activities that I don't tend to want to do for my homeschooling, I put them in the morning and I save the activities that I love for the afternoon when I don't feel like doing anything, because it'll get me to do it. Mm. So that was just a revelation for me too. And it all comes from saying, you know, I'm not like anyone else. I'm unique. And I need to find what works for me without worrying about what anyone else has to say about it.
Mm. Freedom, choice, and then sort of ultimately the willingness to... Because some of the things that we think don't work about us make us feel guilty.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to look at the fact that, you know, I like to take 3 naps a day. My wife tells me this, by the way.
That's funny.
She takes no naps. I take 3.
Wow, good for you.
I'm not sure if I do, but she says I do. She looks around, I'm taking a nap. What the heck are you doing? She's taking a nap. I could never work for someone, she says. they don't have nap time 3 times a day. But that, you know, that's potentially a source of guilt. Like, oh boy, you know, I shouldn't be doing that. I should really be knuckling down, and I should really be focusing harder and trying more.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with the freedom comes this ability to choose, to try to experiment and play with things that, you know, maybe our mind tells us we shouldn't be even trying or thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only real way to find out sort of our strengths and weaknesses is to kind of play with them, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
They're not in a, like you say, it's not in a book. Like, you know, one nap a day is all you should take is not written in a book somewhere.
Right.
We've just got to find out what works for us, and the mm-hmm. only way to do that, it's not by doing more research per se, but it's by having the freedom to try, mm-hmm. try whatever we try, and then see whatever works for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that that sounds like fun.
It is. It is fun. You know, you start with some self-acceptance. You know, this is how I am. This is where I'm starting from. I think if I have any regrets about, not necessarily this series as much, but how I've handled productivity and how I've tried to change the way that I work over the years, is that I didn't start where I was. I tried to change so many things about my work habits all at once. And, you know, of course, that's just destined to fail. If I would have just accepted where I was and made one small change at a time, I think it could have been such a just a more positive experience for me.
Mm. It'd be less fun for us, I gotta tell you.
Yeah,
we're enjoying the ride.
Yeah.
Look at her go.
Well, I'm not trying to change everything at once with this series, so it's not so bad. I do change what I'm trying to do frequently, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In a way, what you've done is it's really extraordinary in the sense that it's not what most people just don't take it on. But we're very happy that you did. And you know, what's next for you? Is there another year?
Well,
coming up?
People have been asking me about that.
Can you vote?
And can you vote?
Yeah.
Well, okay, Francis, I have a question for you then, since you've been reading my blog. I mean, I think at a certain point, you run out of weekly productivity hacks, approaches to test, and I definitely would become weary of doing a weekly, a test every week in and week out, because it's not just, choosing it and writing about it, it's actually implementing it. And many times I found myself thinking, oh yeah, now what am I testing this week? I've got to actually be doing that. So, but I love this topic. I love the topic, and actually, even the subject hasn't gotten weary for me. It's just more being responsible for testing something new every week, because at this point, I'm feeling like I want to put it all together. I want to bring it all together, and that's my plan. Is in January, I plan to take a month to really put all of the approaches that I still believe work for me, put them together and test them out for a month and see what survives. So like, for example, I am not going to tag my tasks with context, right?
Right.
So I know I'm not going to do that. Other approaches I think would work only in certain situations, and I will, keep them in that bag of tricks for that time. But I would like to try to make a cohesive approach and figure out how all those pieces fit together. And quite honestly, I have been doing some of that, but because I'm testing something new every week and really right. think it through. And I want to do that in January. And then I really would like to write an ebook for my subscribers primarily. And just because, like I said, I haven't had a chance with the format of my post to tell people, this is kind of what's happening. I think this is great, but then over time I start going, I don't need to do that. And, right. and I would love right. to have that book as a forum for communicating with readers about, here's what's happened over the course of a year, and here's what is working for me. So that's one thing. A second thing I'm going to do is for homeschoolers in particular. Homeschoolers have very specific organizational and time management needs that aren't addressed in the larger time management productivity world. And I am putting together a weekly challenge for homeschoolers who want to get organized. And so that it's basically, I've organized the organizational challenges. So I think so many people and homeschoolers are like me, and they say, oh, that's a good idea for getting organized. Oh, there's another good idea. And pretty soon you collect so many ideas that you just get overwhelmed and you don't even know where you're supposed to start. And so I am going to try to help homeschoolers do that by giving them a different challenge every week to take on and just spend a little bit of time every week organizing a certain part of their homeschooling lifestyle. So that's one thing. But then, where am I going to go with the blog activities that I'm in? Because I just love it. I love them. I learn as much from them, if not more, than they learn from reading my blog. And so I decided I will keep writing about productivity, but it won't necessarily be okay. Hey, So for example, I think personality is just hugely important in terms of getting things done and working with your particular people. I know how I can test that, but I would love to write about it and write about my experience with using different approaches and how they help me with the personality that I have. So that's where I think it's going to go. I think some weeks I'll write about a productivity book that I read and what I thought and how it changed the way that I work, if any, or an idea for doing something around the house efficiently. Okay, what I'm going to do with the blog itself for my productivity readers is I'm going to be writing every week about just anything that happens. Here's a way that I am able to clean more efficiently, or it could be, here's an app I'm using that I'm absolutely loving that is really helping me in this area. Or it could just be more of a philosophical post on something time management or productivity-wise. I find so many great articles and ideas from other people around the web, and I would love to share those and comment on those and even apply those sometimes to my own life and share that with my readers, but they don't necessarily lend themselves to the kind of testing that I've been doing this past year. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to doing with the blog.
Well, I can tell you, as a fan and as a cheerleader, someone sitting on the side egging you on, you've done amazing work to document what's almost been a full year. And then, you know, that I love to hear what you're planning next, and I'm looking forward to every scrap of it, because if this is any indication, the last 40 something weeks of testing, then the future posts are going to be just as interesting to read. Melanie, where can your or our listeners actually get a hold of you, and what's your blog address, and how can they ask you any questions that they have?
So your listeners can find me at psychowith6.com. That's the number 6. And if you just want to get right to the productivity articles, you can go /category/productivity after psychowith6.com, and that will bring up all of a year of living productively posts and anything else that has to do with productivity or time management. And I also offer subscribers the option just to get productivity-related posts. So if you're not a homeschooler and you don't want to hear about a great curriculum for teaching your kids spelling, you don't have to get those kinds of posts in your reader or on your email. So
fabulous, fabulous. And thanks so much, Melanie, for coming on our show. It's been a real pleasure having you. And thanks for sharing on your blog. Thanks for sharing with us. And I'm sure our listeners have gotten a great deal of value from just hearing someone who's actually trying everything for real, as opposed to just kind of spouting off. So thanks for taking the courage, and thanks for being with us.
Francis, it has been a pleasure talking with you. I am a fan of your writing, your book, and your podcast, and I can't wait to hear more from you on productivity.
Thanks, Melanie. So you've been listening to Dr. Melanie Wilson here on the Two Time Labs podcast. Thanks for listening in. We'll be back with another episode in the near future. Take care. All the best. This is Francis Wade signing out. Bye now.